This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town. Your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Kirsten Diprose, filling in for Rochelle Hunt.
It's now official. Gen X holds the most property wealth in Australia, overtaking the baby boomers as the richest landlords. Gen X were once known as the slacker generation, but now Gen X households have an average of $1.45 million in wealth from dwellings and land. That's according to an analysis of ABS and Census data by KPMG. So are we witnessing a pivotal shift in the generations? You are listening to The Conversation Hour. Good morning to you. Kirsten Diprose here for you, filling in for Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. But first, the light will win. That's the theme of today's National Day of Mourning for the 15 victims of the Bondi terrorist attack. And as part of that day, or of today, we are being invited to perform a mitzvah, known as an act of kindness or compassion. And we'd like you to share with us your acts of kindness today, however small. Perhaps you've been the recipient of an act of kindness from another today. We would love to hear about it.
Today is a national day of mourning, honouring the lives lost and those impacted by the Bondi terrorist attack on 774 ABC Radio Melbourne.
Well, on the 15th of December, just after 8 o'clock, the light turned on a newly installed sculpture titled Sunica to recognise the Jewish community. Meanwhile, that evening, just metres down the road at Bondi, the tragedy had unfolded and paramedics were performing CPR on victims of the shooting. That sculpture took on a much deeper, unintended meaning. Joining us now is the artist behind that sculpture, Joel Adler. Welcome to The Conversation Hour, Joel.
Thanks, Kirsten. It's good to be here.
I was very much using your Instagram post when writing that intro, because the way you framed it was just so startling, to think that here you are, having just popped this installation down in the region, with it to then shine its first light just after such a horrific incident. What are your reflections on that?
Well, it's interesting. We installed it on the Friday. As you know, the attack happened on the Sunday night and we had it automatically programmed to turn on. And obviously when I heard the news of what was happening, I got messages from friends just checking in to see what was going on. And I hadn't been thinking about it. And, you know, we just spent hours and hours checking on people and trying to see what was going on at Bondi. And then later in the night, I had this thought that, you know, the Sunokia, this sculpture we installed a couple of days earlier, was meant to turn on. And I texted my dad, who lives around the corner, and I said, do you know if it came on? And he said it came on automatically as planned. And we started getting messages the next day from people who, you know, at 2 a.m. were leaving Bondi and were seeing this sculpture with the light shining. And it was this tiny little glimpse of, you know, light in this dark day.
Can you describe the piece for people who haven't seen it?
Yeah, so it's a solar and battery-powered Hanukkah, which is usually a Hanukkah is something you'd light with candles, and it's a small object on a table. We decided to make this big, it's almost 4 meters tall, this huge version of it, powered by the sun. And, you know, before the Bondi attack, it was this nice, simple story of creating a sculpture that uses environmentally friendly, you know, technologies, and also has a good story about climate change. And it's also a nice object for this event that was happening, and it's a, you know, 8-day holiday that we do. And then the attack happened and it kind of took on this completely different meaning, and people have really kind of come around and embraced the work as a symbol for hope and light, which has been beautiful.
Yeah, is it something that people in Bondi are gathering around now? You know, whether that's today, but also, you know, in the last few weeks as people grieve and process what's happened.
Yeah, we installed it in Dover Heights, which is only a few minutes up the road from Bondi. And then within a week of the attack, the council basically asked if I'd be happy to move it to Bondi, and it's now sitting in Archer Park where the attack happened. So it's basically become a temporary memorial, and people have been placing flowers and stones on the work as a way to show respect. And yeah, it's become a bit of a centerpiece of that site, which is nice, because in the days after I went to Bondi, and it was kind of stark how empty it is and how it's just an empty park. And I think it's nice to have something there to have people gathering around and looking up towards.
And I was in Sydney over the Christmas period, and I went to Bondi, and it was a strange kind of atmosphere. But there was one thing that struck me, was just people who were milling about memorials and then just striking up conversations with each other as they reflected and looked on. There was a sense of connection that people were wanting. You know, this would have only been a week or two after the attack happened.
Yeah, I mean, we all have differences and we all have different opinions, but I think an attack like this, it makes us all realise that there is a baseline that we all agree on. And, you know, that is something we all share. And I had the same experience where I was just standing in the park and there were other people there, and you kind of look at each other and you acknowledge that this is a terrible thing that's happened and we can't let it happen again.
What was the original meaning or purpose of the sculpture when, you know, you were approached by Waverley Council to do it?
Well, the concept of a Chanukia is something that's, you know, Jews have been, we've had these objects for thousands of years. So I was trying to make a modern interpretation, both in terms of how it functioned as the technology using battery and solar, but also the visual and the form. And that shape, it's this twisting shape that kind of reaches up towards the sky. And in my mind, especially in designing it before the attack, it's about the light and the sunlight kind of reaching back towards the sky. And I think that meaning can still be true and maybe even more important now.
Now, we are holding commemorations right across the country, and right now one is about to begin in Melbourne at St Paul's Cathedral. It's a multi-faith vigil to commemorate those who lost their lives at the Bondi Beach terrorist attack. What's the feeling there in Sydney? Whereabouts are you today?
I'm actually in Melbourne today. I'm not at the beach as much as I would like to be, but I think that it's this very surreal feeling where I think people are trying to go about their days and it feels quite normal, but there's also this in the back of our minds memory of what happened, and it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. What are friends and families of yours doing, you know, in Sydney to mark the National Day of Mourning?
People are going down to the beach, and there's just big gatherings happening there, and I think it's important just to be with other people. And I remember feeling this immediately after the attack. I just went and had tea at a friend's house and just kind of sat with them. We didn't need to talk too much. It was just about being around other people and just making sure that there's that love there.
And I know that people are being asked to, or invited to rather, participate in the concept of mitzvah. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, a mitzvah is one of the holiest things you can do in Judaism, and it doesn't have to be a big gesture. It really can just be a smile. It can be a compliment to someone. It can be holding the door open. It can be these little things that just make people's day, or it makes them a little bit happier. And I think it's the more of that we do, the better the world can be, and, you know, that love can just increase. So I would definitely encourage everyone to try and do that today.
Yeah, it's a fabulous concept, and we're asking people to tell us what their act of kindness is for others, however small, or if you've been the recipient of an act of kindness and how it's brightened your day, or how you've noticed that. Joel Adler, thank you so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Joel Adler there, who is the artist who created a sculpture titled Sunakia, which is now a temporary memorial at Bondi. Yes, the attack, which happened on December 14, and just after it, the lights were turned on. It's a solar installation, and it was lit up. And to think that's when the tragedy had just unfolded, that sculpture now holding a much deeper unintended meaning.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
A few of your text messages wanting to know what else is going on to mark this day. Yes, there is a minute of silence this evening. That will happen at 7:01 this evening. That's a nationwide minute silence. And of course, today we are being invited to stand in unity and remembrance. And this could be lighting a candle and leaving it at your doorstep or window, sharing a meal with family and friends, or performing an act of kindness. And it's all about the light will win. That's how you can really be part of this day of mourning. Well, there appears to be a generational passing of the baton when it comes to property wealth. Gen X now holds the property and the land. The average household wealth is at $1.45 million, according to an analysis of ABS and census data by KPMG, which is just overtaking the baby boomers, who have $1.36 million in average wealth tied up in property. Now, those figures don't take into account the debt. So it's worth noting that boomers remain the wealthiest overall due to their super holdings and their relative levels of debt. But what's actually going on here? For many Gen Xers, they were told that inflated home prices would mean they wouldn't get into the property market. And they were also labelled the slacker generation, mainly because they weren't as quick to get married or take up traditional jobs as the boomers. But hey, look at them now. Are you a Gen X? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Professor Dan Woodman is a sociologist at Melbourne University and joins us now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Kirsten.
When you had a look at this data, what were your initial takes on Gen X creeping up over the boomers in terms of that property wealth?
Well, so there was a headline in the news this morning in one of the papers that said Gen X are the new baby boomers. And as a member of that cohort, I did have a sharp intake of breath and think, oh no, I don't think too many of us want to take that mantle necessarily, because this is a generation that grouping that's kind of been forgotten in all our generational wars takes, but are now getting into their older parts of their working lives. So the baby boomers beforehand, and now many of them, most of them even, are moving into retirement, downsizing, other things, whereas the oldest Gen Xers are now 60 years old. So they've had, after, I guess, a tough start, often in the labour market when they were young adults. The kind of core age groups of the Gen Xers were the ones who met that recession in the early 1990s, so a time when people studied longer, found it harder to get started. But if they did get a start at work and then bought a house, which was starting to get harder, but not as hard as today, by the time they get to 60, those ones who could do that are doing pretty well.
Yeah, we kind of forget, you know, the difficulties of previous generations in getting into the housing market. And we like to have that generational debate about, oh, is it really that hard today compared to back then? I think people would agree it is harder now for young people to get a foot on the property ladder, but it wasn't necessarily easy for Gen X either. There was the recession in the 90s. What else was happening then that may have affected that generation?
So the Gen Xers are pretty much the group that lived through the biggest changes in education and the labour market, really, in decades, because that was the group that was really the first to in large numbers go through to the end of year 12. And they kind of got this message, invest in yourself, do education, maybe do some post-school study, and that's when post-high school pathways really started to boom as well. So they did all the right things that they were told to do, and then didn't find the rewards coming in their early 20s, a lot of them. So it was a tough time, but they were also a cohort that kind of was the first to benefit from super across all their lives. And for the ones who did get into property, which was possible in the 1990s and even 2000s without help from parents, which is becoming the way young people are doing it now. So if they did get in, and a lot did, over time that tough start has kind of dissipated. And there's a lot of diversity amongst Gen Xers that we've got to always remember. But as I said, those ones that did get on that pathway, maybe a little bit later into their 20s, as they've headed into their 50s and 60s, they do have this. They do have some wealth behind them now. Although, as you said, some are still paying off the mortgage that goes along with that property wealth.
Yes, and I've got a few text messages here asking for some more details on those statistics by KPMG, looking at ABS data. Is the stat per head or per household? So this is per household, because I initially read it and sort of went, oh my goodness, really? That seems like a lot. It's per household, and it's not taking into account the loans you might have. And looking at Gen X, the loans are still quite high. So the average debt is $425,000. So the dwellings and land property is $1.4 million and $425,000 in debt, average household, which is really high, especially compared to boomers only have about $160,000, which is not overly surprising, but millennials' debt is about $460,000. So really not that, you know, worse than the Gen X. What does that tell us, Stan?
Yes. So there's this picture of a group that as a collective at the household level now does have some wealth behind them, but you could say, instead of saying congratulations to the Gen Xers or the millennials, you could say congratulations to their bank managers, because we still have been carrying these really high debts, and particularly the millennials in these statistics that have been released do have a bit of wealth behind them, but honestly they often have at least as much debt, so almost going alongside that wealth. So what you see in that wealth picture is just people buying an average or below average house, and maybe about half of them being able to do that, and then having that debt that goes alongside it. What is happening more and more is that people aren't paying off the mortgage till they get close to retirement, even after. And people are starting to rely on where they can, maybe inheritances or other things like this to finally pay off the mortgage, just like the younger cohorts are maybe relying more and more, again, where they can, on that bank of mum and dad to start building up this wealth in property as well.
Professor Dan Woodman is with us, sociologist at Melbourne University. Let's go to the talkback line, and Rob is in Geelong. Hi, Rob.
Hi. How are you? I'd just like to make a point that I don't think has been mentioned yet, that some of these Gen Xers are starting to inherit them.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Rob. You're on not a great line there, but you're asking, is it really about inheritance? Yes, I was thinking that too. Is it the baby boomers dying, Dan?
Well, it's a bit morbid, but yes, unfortunately, sorry, baby boomers, the older ones are really starting to get on. One of the things that has changed is that, on average, our lives are going for longer, which is a wonderful thing. But it does mean that inheritances are coming a little bit later in people's lives. So more around that you know, late 50s, 60s age period, which means that if you're relying on that to finally pay off the mortgage, you're going to be stuck with a big mortgage for a large part of your working life. So one of the things we've noticed is that increasingly people are bringing forward that inheritances. So again, it's not everyone who can do this. But some baby boomers have been helping either their grandchildren or their children with the mortgages or with getting into the housing market earlier on. So these kind of while they're living inheritances that get passed on.
Yeah. On the text line, a lot of reaction here. As a Gen X, I acknowledge that we were lucky to be born when we were so that we could get onto the property ladder. Not as lucky as the baby boomers, but still being able to buy a small house for under 300K in the inner west. I just hope that Gen X don't start carrying on about how kids these days don't want to sacrifice to get a house. We were lucky, and subsequent generations are doomed to never own a house. Another text sort of says, some of us baby boomers are also still paying off our mortgages for our modest homes. Yes, absolutely. Another person says, what a load of BS. I'm 52 and only just entered the market 3 years ago. It took me 10 years to save a deposit for an apartment. I'm not going out every night, and I'm shopping for Kmart for clothes. Yes, statistics don't always tell the full story. And another text says, remember, a lot of Gen X people did not have compulsory super accumulating. So for many of us in industries like the arts, we were not accumulating superannuation until it became compulsory. And I think that's a big part of the equation. Dan Woodman, that's important too. I mean, baby boomers really didn't start getting super until later, but in general have a decent amount of super. I suppose it's been part of their investment strategy, in more recent times. But yeah, Gen X are also impacted on this. We think of that generation as the super generation, but it wasn't all sorted out for all of that generation.
No. And the amount that is compulsory has gone up over time as well. And so not all Gen X's, and it covers quite a large time span, but a lot of them have benefited more than the baby boomers probably from super. But your callers are right. These are average and broad brush things, and all that details of individual lives and all the sharp inequalities in our society get lost. So of course there's people who really rightly want to point out not all boomers, but maybe we need to say not all Gen X's now as well, because there can be life changes and other things that mean you feel like you're starting to get financial security and it disappears from you. And what we're more likely to see than a generation of, Gen Z or the younger millennials who completely miss out on building this wealth, is we're probably going to see a greater division between the people who do find a way to get into having home ownership in Australia, and then some of them will become investors as well, and a larger group than the Gen X's that won't be able to do that.
Professor Dan Woodman is with us, sociologist at Melbourne University. Are you Gen X? Does this feel like a rebrand? You know, did you grow up thinking you'd never own a house or have a job? Do you find it surprising that you're in a position now where Gen X have officially just taken over the baby boomers in terms of overall average household wealth in owning property and land? There are a lot of caveats to this, Dan, that we've been talking about. Let's go to Kevin, who's in Geelong. Hi, Kevin.
Yes, how are you going there?
Good. What did you want to say?
Well, there's a couple of things. Of course, firstly, Keating got rid of negative gearing and then brought it back again. Secondly, Australia is the only place in the world where I think we privatised our pension system. No other country's tried to do that. But the third and the main thing is Keating abolished the Commonwealth State Housing Agreement, which pretty much flattened social housing. So the people at the bottom now have got no other option than to go into the private market with everybody else. When I grew up, we had things like the projects, like the Housing Commission. That doesn't exist anymore. We've privatised social housing through negative gearing.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. Thank you so much for your call. It's so worthwhile, Dan, going back in time. And I know as a sociologist, you do this, but we in the media, we often are very much about day to day, what happened recently. But the effects of, say, Keating, and I mean, super came in under Keating, didn't it?
You're testing my knowledge a little bit too much there.
But I'm a millennial, so I was very young.
The caller makes the really valid point. I think that when we see these stories of different generations, often we use it to pitch one generation against another, where it's probably better to look at it as a story of a changing Australia where the spread of opportunity and also the way inequalities unfold, say around housing and the privatisation of housing, play out. So instead of seeing it as a generation war, it's maybe a story of a changing Australia is a better way to look at these new numbers from KPMG.
A lot of text messages. 1992 compulsory super, so Gen X would have started work with it, says one text. Yes, but I think it wasn't as sort of across the board as it is now, and certainly not as high. Another text says, stay in a relationship, stay married for a long time, and that will help. I mean,
yeah,
yes,
that's right. It's a little bit like those Jane Austen books. If you can just marry the right person with the right wealth, that's one way to sort it out.
And don't forget the baby boomers were paying 17% interest on mortgages and often worked for 50 years in boring jobs. There is that generational shift, and that is probably what Gen X is best known for, of saying, oh, no, we're not going to get married so early. We're not going to work in the same job. We might take a little bit longer. And that's really filtered down the next generations. Millennials have carried that on, and Gen Z are really holding the mantle. But part of that comes back to housing, doesn't it, Dan? Because now young people can't actually afford to rent or get their own place.
Yeah, there was this kind of picture of Gen Xers as they were young adults, of slackers or people who didn't want to do it the same way their parents had. And there was a degree of truth to that. But we, with colleagues, we've had a study where we were talking to those young adults in the 1990s and continue to do it through to today. And it was probably more a story of just not being able to do those things as early, as much as not wanting to. And we still see that today, I think, where there's this fine balance between maybe people not wanting to rush into things across their life course, but also a world that just makes it really hard to do so.
This text from Elijah in Epping, Gen Z here, sad that this is marked as an achievement. It's interesting to see if Gen Xers, who derided the luckiness of the boomers, are now motivated to protect the housing speculation that has ruined our property market. This is a millennial view of what there seems to have been a bit of rivalry between Gen X and the boomers in particular. I think subsequent generations seem to be a little bit nicer to each other. This is my observation. But yeah, how does Gen X reflect on what it will be like to other generations?
So we have a group of Gen Xers that we followed when they were young adults, and the study's a lot smaller now as we've lost people along the way, but there's still a small group of a couple of hundred. We still survey every now and then and do some interviews with. And one thing I will say is that, you know, this might change as it becomes more apparent to everyone that this is the generation that's now in the top jobs and maybe as a cohort as a whole with a lot of the wealth. But a lot of our participants do realise that the world has changed for their children. So they're pretty good at not expecting them to do things exactly as they did it. But also, yeah, as I was saying, we do risk this world becoming more of a kind of picture of Australia where instead of a battle between the Gen Xers and younger generations, it's a case of whether your Gen X parents are in a position to help you out as you're a young adult today, as a Gen Zer, that makes a difference more than a kind of intergenerational war.
Yes, I think we might be having to put our hands out to subsequent generations. Dan Woodman, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to chat.
Professor Dan Woodman, sociologist at Melbourne University. 1300 222 774, or you can text 0437 774 774. We're continuing this conversation about the generations, and also it is, of course, a national day of mourning today, and we are being asked or invited to perform a mitzvah, an act of kindness or compassion. So share with us what that act of kindness is for you, however small. Have you been a recipient, or are you planning on an act of kindness?
on the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Kirsten DiProse here filling in for Rochelle Hunt today. And just letting you know, the Great Ocean Road has now been reopened to traffic between Lawn and Skeens Creek following a recovery operation that was to retrieve the vehicles on the beach after that crazy storm and flooding last week. So the Black Hawks were out pulling those from the water. It would have been amazing to see, but the Great Ocean Road is now open to traffic. A day of tennis. It's a moving day. We love the Australian Open, and Lauren Borden is with us from ABC Sport, who is there at Melbourne Park. Hi, Lauren.
Hello, Kirsten. Yeah, back for day 5 of the Australian Open. So feels like we're a long way into it, but still a long way to go at the moment.
And what's happening day 5 today?
So at this very moment, we've got an Australian on court in Rinki Hijikata. So he's, unfortunately, it's not good news to bring you right at the top of the day. He's down love 5 against Valentin Vacherot of Monaco, who probably isn't the biggest name that you've ever heard of, but he is seeded 30 at this tournament after basically was ranked in the 200s in about September last year and then went on a good run towards the end of the year to now be seeded 30 at this tournament. And he's broken Hijikata a couple of times already. He's up 5 love in this first set. Hijikata to serve to stay in this first set. It's not the greatest news for a wild card in Rinki Hijikata today, but we're looking for an Australian to join Alex de Minaur in the third round, really. And hopefully we can get at least one more after 21 Australians started in this tournament. You want more than one to make it into the third round. So at the moment, it's a big watch on Rinki Hijikata as the day starts at the Australian Open.
Okay, and I think people are still recovering after yesterday. So de Minaur through, gave us a bit of a scare at the beginning, but not so good for the other Aussies.
No. So, yeah, you're right, Alex de Minaur against Hamad Medjidovic. I didn't expect de Minaur to lose the first set in that one at all. I thought he'd go through in straight sets, but obviously he recovered after that rain delay. And from the sounds of it, de Minaur was happy enough with how he played and just had that little scare that you see a lot of the good players have in the early rounds of the tournament. And now he's got Francis Tiafoe. So that's probably, I'm a bit more concerned about this game coming into the third round. He's a very good player, the American Francis Tiafoe, and that'll be the big test for Alex. But yeah, like you mentioned, Priscilla Hohn exited right after Alex de Minaur, and that was in straight sets. Unfortunately, pretty simple for Ivor Jovic to get over the Australian in that. Isla Tomljanovic was out, Talia Gibson. Jordan Thompson fought hard, but in the end lost in four sets to Nuno Borges. So they were just some of the Aussies that weren't able to get through yesterday. But look, there's a few more on court today. They've drawn some big names, though. So probably the biggest of that is James Duckworth tonight. He won through and played a full 5 sets, would be exhausted. And he's taking on Yannick Sinner, the 2-time reigning champion, who didn't even have to play 3 sets. His opponent retired hurt the other night. So that's a very difficult matchup for James Duckworth. And, yeah, a lot of the Aussies today have got some tough opponents if they are to get through to the third round.
So how many Australians do we have left? You said 21 started?
Yes. So there would be Alex de Minaur's already through, and then we've got Duckworth today, Sweeney, Hijikata, Taylor Preston, Maddie Inglis. So they're our Australians today. I didn't count them up there, but they are who are in action today in the singles and have a chance of making it through to the third round.
So we've got our first men's single match today. Who are the ones to watch? Like, what are the players that we expect to go well across the board? Yeah. I'm talking internationally now, not just the Aussies.
Yep. Well, look, Novak Djokovic is on court today, so obviously he's one that there's always going to be a watch on, given he's now he has 100 wins at the Australian Open, which is just incredible when you think of it as not 100 matches, 100 wins. So he's on the day session at Rodeva Arena, which he doesn't normally like. He requests the night session, but because now, you know, Yannick Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz have gone above him, they've got the night session. So he's definitely one to watch. I'm interested too, when you look at maybe players that aren't as well-known, Lorenzo Musetti of Italy. It's an all-Italian matchup. He's taking on Lorenzo Sonego, his own countryman, on Margaret Cornarina. And Musetti's one that's really risen up the ranks. He's always been in and around it, but now he's the number 5 seed here. So he is probably one to watch in terms of the internationals. And Jess Pegula is just in warming up on Rod Laver Arena, on centre court at the moment. And I always love watching her. Her family is the one that owns the Buffalo Bills. And so she has been playing tennis for a long time, always struggles to get past kind of the quarterfinals, but is a good player, but just can't make that step. So she's taking on McCartney Kessler, another American. There's about 30 Americans across the men's and women's draw. It's a huge number, and now they've drawn each other. So I'm interested to see if Jess Pegula can kind of make the next steps that she needs to in her career.
Lauren, thank you so much for joining us for the Oz Open update. I love hearing the background noise. I'm picturing you like crouched in the back of a court, just talking to me while it's all happening.
That's exactly it. Just trying to keep quiet so I don't get in trouble.
Something's just happened. I feel like you're just being like, oh, shush, you know, something's just happened. I love
it. Rinky Hijikata has just won his first game. So he's held serve. He's still down 1-5 in the first set.
Lauren Borden, thank you. And Demon Orr's playing Friday night, is that right?
Yes, so he'll be playing, well, it hasn't come out yet, the schedule, but we'll anticipate that he will be on the night match on Friday night.
Okay, we'll be watching with great anticipation. Lauren Borden from ABC Sport, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kirsten.
You are listening to The Conversation Hour. Kirsten Diprose here. I'm filling in for Rochelle Hunt, and we've been asking people about acts of kindness as part of our National Day of Mourning. Gabrielle says, her name is Gabrielle after the angel. I try to live up to my name every day. I know how much it can make a difference to someone's day. So that is one act of kindness. It can be such a small thing. Another text wanted to know why we're asking people, because people perform acts of kindness without something that you tell people, and you should not be seeking praise when you do that. And yeah, I agree, but I don't think we talk about it enough. It's about kind of keeping it front of mind so that when you're just out and about going about your day, you can do something to help, whether that's putting some money in the meter for someone, helping a lady with a pram, whatever it is. And I love to share this because I think it gives us ideas on how can we just be more present in our kindness. And today being a National Day of Mourning, this is how we've been invited to pay our respects and honour the 15 victims of the Bondi terrorist attack.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, there's been so much activity in our skies of late. We had the Black Hawks this morning. The Great Ocean Road has reopened. But Saturday, we will have some roulettes flying above. You'll be able to see them over Geelong. To tell us about this is Alex Christensen. He's with the Air Force Roulettes. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Kirsten. Thanks for having me.
What is happening? I believe this is part of the Sails Festival, or the Festivals of Sails.
That's right, yeah. So the Festival of Sails at Geelong, which we're super proud and happy to be participating overhead on Saturday. We're going to be doing a display overhead at 3:30 p.m. We have done it over the last few years, a combination of sometimes the full formation of six aircraft or just one, but lucky this year we're doing all six, so the whole team for a display overhead on Saturday.
Wow, all six. And so what will people see? Do they fly in unison?
Yeah, so the team, we've been, the roulettes has been displaying for over 55 years now. So a lot of the listeners have probably seen us in some shape or form in maybe a different aeroplane. We now fly the Pilatus PC-21, and the full team complement is six. So you'll see six aeroplanes in close formation, about a couple of metres apart at times, always smoke on, up to sometimes just above 600 kilometres an hour overhead the Geelong waterfronts, but best spot to see it on Saturday, centred around the Cunningham sort of pier area.
If we're not in Geelong, is there a chance we might see it fly over? Because I understand these planes are based at the RAF base in East Sale. So when will they come across?
Yeah, so we're overhead at 3:30, as you said. So we'll be around from about the 3 o'clock onwards time. People will see us in some shape or form. Depending on exactly the weather on the day, it's a bit hard for me to tell you the exact route, but we'll be on descent across the bay towards Geelong from about 3 o'clock. But there will be another opportunity to see us on Monday, but I'll get to that in a second.
What about flying the roulettes themselves? Like, how tricky are they to actually fly? What are the differences between, you know, more modern aircraft?
Yeah, well, the PC21 is actually quite a modern machine. The Air Force has had it as our primary trainer and advanced trainer since 2019. It's built by Pilatus, and it's quite a new aeroplane. And I enjoy flying all different types of aeroplane. In comparison to many others, like your Cessnas and that sort of thing, it's quite simple in its interaction with the human. It's quite easy to fly, but it is relatively fast, and it's really fun to fly. I love flying it. It's a great machine.
Now, you said Monday was another chance that we could catch the roulettes. What's happening then?
That's right. So Australia Day will be over King's Domain, so a display at 12:15. There should be a 21-gun salute at around midday, I believe, and we're going to display just after that. So anywhere on the eastern side of the city, you should be able to see us quite easily, but the centre of our display will be over the Government House area in King's Domain. Awesome to be overhead the city again, super nice weather predicted, and always smoke on. Another display with six aircraft. I'm really looking forward to that.
Alex Christensen, thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kirsten. We'll see you guys over the weekend.
Alex is with the Air Force Roulettes, and yes, you can see them in Geelong. Geelong Waterfront is the best position on Saturday afternoon. It's part of the Festival of Sails, and then on Australia Day Monday as well. Some more of your text messages. Plenty still talking about the Gen X now taking over baby boomers in terms of average household property wealth. One reason we Gen Xers are more wealthy now is that many of us are starting to lose our parents and inheriting their assets. Our parents are the generation before baby boomers and didn't need to share their wealth with us earlier. So it's not surprising this happens as we all age. Yes, and another reason that's being discussed as well is the baby boomers actually moving some of their money out of property. So perhaps downsizing, moving money into cash or savings, super, those sorts of things is potentially another reason why we are seeing Gen X now take the mantle of the baby boomers.
Today is a national day of mourning, honouring the lives lost and those impacted by the Bondi terrorist attack on 774 ABC Radio Melbourne.
Yes, the light will win is the theme of today's National Day of Mourning. And here in Melbourne, a multi-faith vigil to commemorate those who lost their lives in the Bondi Beach terrorist attack is underway at St Paul's Cathedral. There'll be a nationwide minute silence at 7:01 p.m. That will also be observed. And we're also being invited today to stand in unity and remembrance, which could be lighting a candle and leaving it at your doorstep or window, sharing a meal with family or friends, or performing an act of kindness. And we here across Victoria are especially holding the people of Bondi and Sydney in our hearts. Now, to hear how they are marking this day, we are joined by Linda Ben-Mache, the President of the National Council of Jewish Women Australia. Thank you for joining us, Linda.
Thank you, Kirsten.
So whereabouts are you right now?
I'm in Sydney, and I will say that it is deeply meaningful to Jewish Australian women to have all of Australia standing with us today. We're mourning, you know, a national tragedy, and the solidarity of our neighbours means everything to us. We're very, very grateful for it.
Yeah. What's happening in Sydney today? There are, I understand, various memorials and ways in which people will be commemorating. For some, it might be going down to Bondi, and for others, it might be more staying inside with family and friends.
Well, yes. I mean, family and friends is where the focus is. And as Jewish women, when Jewish Australians are targeted, it's us who see our family's fear first. We carry the emotional load of managing that fear and keeping our families, especially our children, safe. And that also means caring about the safety of all Australians. And so we are very much focused at home, but there are commemorations this evening, and I know that a lot of people are going down to Bondi today and tonight.
How is the Jewish community in Sydney faring now? It's a bit over a month, I suppose, since the attack. Still, obviously, very much in grief. But how would you describe the community in terms of how it's going?
Well, I think we're not beyond the trauma yet. I mean, it was a shock to see 15 innocent people slaughtered at, you know, our country's most iconic beach. And Jewish Australians are still living with that shock. And we are also finding that, you know, anti-Semitic hate is still a daily reality for our children at schools and universities. It's a reality for Jewish Australian women and men in our workplaces, cultural spaces, in the media, online, everywhere. We, in general, are not feeling safe. And, of course, Bondi showed us that we're not safe.
So that feeling of not feeling safe, is that still with you now and with members of the community?
Absolutely. Look, you know, Jewish mourning has three phases. There's the 7 days after the death. There's a month, which is where we are now, which is still a very, very raw time. And then there's a 1 year marking. And in fact, that final stage will coincide with the conclusion of the Royal Commission. But right now, at 1 month, yes, we are still deep in trauma and in pain.
Linda Ben-Manashi is with us. There is a National Day of Mourning, and there aren't many that have actually been held before in Australia. I was having a look and I could see the Queen, when the Queen died, that was one, and Black Saturday. What does it mean to have a National Day of Mourning for the community and Sydney more broadly?
Well, this is a national day, and I think, you know, this was the worst attack on Australians in our history, the worst terror attack. And so it's a day for all of us. Jewish people were the immediate target, yes, but it was an attack on all of us. I think Jewish people respond to grief in a very practical way. We, you know, we've talked about the mitzvah, and the Premier has said that we should all be doing good deeds and deeds of kindness as a response to this evil. And that is what our community is doing. In fact, in our tradition, there isn't a word for charity. The word is actually tzedakah, which means justice. And so it's doing things to help repair the broken world, and that means repair it for everyone.
Ah, that's, yeah, really interesting. The concept of mitzvah, and we've been discussing acts of kindness throughout this program, but can you tell me where that concept really comes from and ways in which to practice it?
Well, it's part of our Jewish tradition, so it's from our text. And a mitzvah is something like visiting the sick, opening your home to people who need comfort or care. It's helping animals. It's giving money to people and causes who need help. I'll give you an example. So my partner is part of this huge Jewish volunteer network. It's about 2,000 people in it. And since December 14, this is just ordinary people, right, from all walks of life in our community. Since December 14, they have been taking calls kind of all day, every day, from people who needed help. So, for example, they would hear that somebody was sitting with their injured family member in hospital after they were shot at Bondi, and they've been sitting there and they need clean clothes. And so the call would go out on the WhatsApp group, can somebody go and pick up the laundry, get it washed and return it? And within 3 minutes, that would be answered. You know, somebody's family was coming from overseas. There was at one point, I think, a family of 12 arriving from the United States because somebody had been either murdered or injured in the attack. Sorry, it's quite emotional.
Yeah.
And they needed somewhere to stay. So this group of 2,000 volunteers found an empty house. They furnished the house. They got food in there. They got toys for kids. They delivered meals, and that all sort of happened, and those people were looked after for the weeks that they were here. That's the sort of thing people are doing.
That's huge. And the feeling of that kindness and being looked after will stay with those people forever.
Well, I hope so. And look, that is the Jewish tradition. We focus on how we can make the world better now in the present, but we're also looking at the future. And I want to say we have to be honest about what led to the attack at Bondi. You know, yes, gun access, that's an important issue, etc. But the real issue here is the spread of extremist ideas, ideas that make violence against children and families seem acceptable, that make people pick up a gun, you know. And in Australia, we should not be afraid to say those extremist ideas, they can come from the extreme right, the extreme left, and Islamist extremism, and we have to be able to name that.
Linda Ben-Manashe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kirsten. Really appreciate it.
Linda Ben-Manashe, the president of the National Council of Jewish Women Australia, based in Sydney. And your text messages, talking about acts of kindness. Wayne here, it's important that we talk about acts of kindness, not to encourage them to, not to encourage people to do it, but because they happen all the time, but rather that people need to be grateful when they happen to them. Nothing worse than doing something kind if people take it for granted. Mindfulness goes both ways. Sandy says, I'm planting trees and shrubs and grass plants for our native birds and reptiles and small animals on our acreage. Being kind to our birds and animals should count too. Yeah, absolutely. And Linda mentioned animals as well as an act of kindness. And another text, Kate says, on Monday, I pranged my car while parking, hit the tree in the garden bed, heaps of kind people checking how I was. I was being a drama queen and crying, sitting on my walker. The insurance company were no help. About four people checked on me, and one woman, Cheryl, stayed around and then took me back to my unit. So very kind. Great examples of kindness. Acts of kindness, yes, absolutely. And that is just one way in which we are being invited to remember today the people who died in the Bondi terror attacks in Sydney last month. Thank you. My name's Kirsten Diprose. I will catch you next week. Rochelle is in the chair tomorrow. Have a good day.